everyone. I'm Troy Dodds, and welcome to the On The Record podcast presented by The Western Weekender. On this podcast, I'm joined by special guests who all have such great stories to tell about Penrith and the role they've played in our city. They are Penrith stories told by Penrith people. Today, my special guest is Ray Firewood. Ray had a stellar career in the New South Wales Police Force, with Penrith and St Mary's always intertwined in his achievements and postings. Most notably, he became commander of the St Mary's LAC in 2003, steering the local station through the next decade. I really hope you enjoy our chat. Ray, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Troy.
First question we always ask, where and where were you born and where did you grow up?
Yes, look, I was born in 1953 in Grafton at Runnymede Hospital. That was a maternity hospital for the local area, and it's actually closed down, I think, about 1968. So no longer there. The building's still there, but the hospital no longer operates.
And you moved around a fair bit in regional areas when you were younger?
I did. Father, he was on the railways, a ganger, and he had different posts at different time, but the mother was domestic duties. There was, in the family, there was five of us. I was the youngest. Three older sisters and one older brother. We started off just when I was born. We were around the Lawrence area, which is just north of Grafton, farther on the railway, and then, you know, we did that for some time. I ended up going to schooling at a little school up between Grafton and Casino called Whipperee. That was quite interesting. Don't have a lot of memories other than to jumping on trains and travelling to the school and back. So around that time, you know, it was, I didn't remember a lot, but, you know, it was early days in life.
And regional New South Wales at that time, was the city divide, you know, pretty huge compared to, say, what it is now, where it feels like we're a bit more connected at least?
Oh, yes, yes, no, true. That country was country, you know, and city was really city, and later on, as I come through to the police career, I'll probably elaborate a little bit more on that. But there was a big culture shock, you know, just to get involved, you know, in the local areas and getting used to the local city.
Now, tell me about your first job. Very hands-on, I believe, on a poultry farm. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, well, it was a poultry farm, but as in sort of a chronological order, the father actually moved down to Area Park, which was in the Riverina. He was working there for about 4 years, so I spent time between, say, 7 and 11 age group in that area. And then, basically, he got transferred back to the New England area, up in that area. So he went to just north of Tamworth, a place called Katingal. And I went to the public school there. When I left there, I went to Tamworth High School, Oxley High School, ran Year 8. You know, I was working sort of part-time on a farm, poultry farm, and I was offered a full-time job there. So I left school, I went and worked on a poultry farm in Moonbi for a couple of years. And what happened there was, you know, it was quite good at the beginning, but after a while I thought I need to do something more concrete with the life, and I was looking at getting an apprenticeship. So there was a chap up the road who was a plumber, and I went and knocked on his door and asked if I could get an apprenticeship with him. He said, yeah, not a problem. So I rattled up there on the Monday to start, and he wasn't there. He'd gone broke and owed money everywhere. And so I went back to the farm, and the New South Wales Police were advertising in the local Northern Daily Leader, and I had friends in Tamworth, and they said they were coming, they're going to go and try and get into the police. So I said, all right, that sounds great, and I decided to do that at the same time.
So as it turns out, we're lucky that plumber went broke. It could have been a very different career.
Well, I could be still in town with as a plumber.
1973, that is, that you decide to, yes. You see that ad in the local paper, and you decide to follow a policing career. But a pivotal year for you as well, because as part of that, you do meet your future wife in the same
Absolutely,
year.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, I came to Sydney in May, and July I was sworn into the police force after doing the initial training. First posting was North Sydney. And that was, you know, right in the, pretty well in the middle of the city, you know, on the northern side, of course. And the wife, who, she was working for New South Wales Police Administrative System and in the traffic area at that time. So I got to meet her. She had to come into the station for a reason and spoke to her. And later on, we struck up a relationship and started dating later that year and ended up getting married in 75, a couple of years later.
heading up to a 50th anniversary in a couple of years.
Yes, yeah. I think next week's 48, so it's not far off.
Very good. And then you did your training at Redfern, so this was long before Goulburn?
Yes. Yeah, we came to Redfern. We did 6 weeks initial training there. It was a matter of actually getting used to Sydney, the culture shock. I didn't mind the physical side of it. We used to go over to Moore Park and run up hills and get fit and all that type of thing. But then you had the academic side, and you'd spent 6 weeks there, and then over that next 12 months period, you come back to Redfern Police Academy and you do a period of time each month. And at the end of the 12 months, I think it was about a 2 week period, you'd come back for the secondary training before you got confirmed as a constable, if you met all the requirements along the way.
And Penrith first comes into your life in around 1980, is that right? Had you been to Penrith at any stage before then at all, or had any affiliation with it?
No. The only time that we hadn't been out here, and we were living at Wollstonecraft. I was living there with a couple of mates and before I got married, and there was a real estate guy there, and he was saying, if you want to get into real estate, and this is early 70s, he said, you should go out to West, and they're still quite cheap out there. And so after we got married, we ended up coming out here and buying a place at Cambridge Park, our first place was, and sort of went to there. But that was about late 1980. I'd finished working in the city and came out here and met some nice people. I've been a relationship with the area ever since.
And for you, what was Penrith like in that early 1980s period, both to live and to work?
Yeah. Look, I think it's grown, extraordinary limits now to what it was. But when I got here, the old police station that was in High Street had been knocked down and they were constructing the new one. And they had demountables over on Henry Street, and we worked out of those at the beginning. And resourcing levels wasn't that much. You might have a couple of car crews working to facilitate the area. And for me, I didn't mind it because even today you can drive not far out of the city here, in Penrith City, and you're into rural land. So, you can remind you a bit of country.
Absolutely, it does, yeah. 1983, you moved to St Mary's Police Station. And indeed, up until recently, Penrith and St Mary's very separate in regards to policing. But what was St Mary's like? Because that 1980s period of St Mary's, it was pretty vibrant. It was a very vibrant part of Penrith, and almost a separate part of Penrith in comparison to today.
Yes, yeah, I agree. I think that like back then it was divisions, what they called divisions, and St Mary's was a substation of Penrith, a smaller one. But the community was always been a great community down there, and all different demographics, so low socioeconomic to medium to high, and everyone had an interest in the town. Resourcing wise, you'd only have probably one crew and a supervisor and someone in the station, so you didn't have a lot of people working, especially night shifts, but day shifts might be a few more. But what I remember probably more about being down there around the mid 80s, 83, was the development of places like St Clair and that. They were really getting built at that time, and you'd go for a drive out there and there's just buildings going up everywhere.
What about from a crime perspective? What was the main issue in St Mary's in early to mid 1980s?
Probably break and enters, some drug issues, antisocial behaviour, especially late at night, heading down to the railway station or something, people going home, and having a little bit too much to drink, those type of issues, but nothing insurmountable.
Around that time as well, you play a pretty pivotal role in the police response to the Bathurst motorcycle race riots. So just tell me a bit of background about that for those that don't know what happened in Bathurst and how you got involved.
Yeah. Well, what happened there was, I'd only been to Bathurst motorcycle races once, and the people doing the roster just picked someone out to stand up, so I went up with a number of other people. I was a supervisor on a truck on the hill with two other people and on the mountain itself. So we were driving around there, and there was quite a few other police there at the time, and, with the tactical response group, and a number of heaps of other general duties type police. But there was quite a few thousand people on the hill, A lot of them, most of them, biking enthusiasts. And someone, I believe, drove a Volkswagen into a campsite and nearly ran over someone. That caused some of the local bikey people to probably had a bit too much to drink to flare up, and they ended up turning the car over, burning it, and then started to take, took on the police. Didn't like the police being there. So what happened, it was probably the scariest thing I've been involved in the police force, where it turned out to be full-blown riot. And all these people surrounded the police compound on top of the hill. Did have a fence around it, but they surrounded it and they were throwing bricks, breaking down brick toilets and breaking them up and throwing bricks into the compound at you, and Molotov cocktails, light toilet rolls, rocks, you name it, sticks, you know. Everything was being thrown in there, and it took about, I think the whole thing went for about 5.5 hours. Until the tactical response group, who had all the protection gear, the shields and everything, were able to force them back. As the night went on, some of them left and moved away. But there was quite a few arrests there. I got involved in a couple of arrests and was going back to Bathurst, I think, for about the next 2 years to have it resolved. So, but it was a scary night, and you wouldn't want to be involved in something like that every night.
You mentioned there probably the most frightening moment of your long career.
Yeah.
We often probably forget that when it comes to our police. You're human at the end of the day, and you're still allowed to be scared, still allowed to be frightened
in
situations
well,
like that.
It's, you know, pretty well the whole compound was surrounded by these angry people, full of alcohol and drugs and whatever else, and they were only there for one purpose, and it was to, you know, to take on the police.
Mm.
So we were lucky that, you know, common sense probably prevailed in the end, and everyone sort of, I think it was about 100 people arrested, but they sort of broke up. Police tactical response group forced them away from the area and they broke up. But they themselves, the police tactical response group, they received lots of injuries, broken legs, broken ankles, where they had bricks thrown at their unprotected lower parts of their legs and things like that, because they had shields.
Sure.
But they didn't have the lower limbs sort of protected.
You, your career continues along, and you're moving to the State Intelligence Group. What was that? What was that all about, and how did that come about?
Just prior to that, in the Penrith area here, in the district area, I worked in the proactive teams, which were not responsive. They worked off intelligence, and, you know, you'd get information, and you'd, you know, analyse that information, and you'd work through it to if there was something of a criminal nature, and you'd be looking at things like breaking headers and following those type of things up. But that led me into the State Intelligence, and I ended up going down there, which is in Surry Hills, what they call the old hat factory in Campbell Street, and I was in charge of the property crime desk there at the Tactical Intelligence, and also street crime.
Okay.
So you looked at all intelligence coming into from the state in terms of different things happening, and then you'd actually put that through a process to decipher which was the proper thing, and then you'd work out action plans to follow up and have operational police to go and actually execute them.
Pretty early days of technology and things like that, I guess, in regards to intelligence. It's changed dramatically these days, or would have changed dramatically by the end of your career as well.
Yeah, like the information technology has just taken over, and that was a great thing. And even back then, the people in on the team, there was one chap there, he was a wizard at being able to put graphs and anything to do with these type of crimes together. And you'd have to do briefings for the executive of police department and things like that. So. This was early days with the computers, but they had all the good stuff there.
Mm. Back locally, you end up working with the South Penrith Patrol, which I've got to admit, when we were discussing earlier and going through some notes, I'd never heard of. South Penrith Patrol, what was the concept there? And was there a Regentville station at some point along the way there?
Yeah, around that, I think it was 87, they went, I think, from divisions to patrols. So they split Penrith up, and they made South Penrith, and I was got a promotion to senior sergeant tactician, and I got transferred to that patrol. So the first year or two, we worked at in the police station at Penrith. And then they got their demandables down at Jeanette Street there at Regiville. And we worked from there. And then that eventually linked up with St Mary's and came out of the St Mary's Local Area Command.
A couple of years later, 1999, you had probably a pretty significant career year because you started as the LAAC Commander at Blue Mountains. And in the same year, the Glenbrook train disaster occurs, which everyone would remember. A terrible day. Take us through your involvement at that level and early days for you in your Blue Mountains role.
Yeah, look, just prior to that, I'd done a fair bit of relieving work in the inner west area in local area commands, Newtown, Leichhardt, Eastwood, Marrickville, those areas. But then I got the promotion up here, and it was in the first year. I only started here July of 99. This was about the beginning of December, about the 2nd, I think it was. I was at an operational meeting for the deputy commissioners, where all commanders were in the city. They all meet there, and you know, they were having a meeting. I think it was one of the Mason, I think it's centre there in Goulburn Street. But anyhow, Jeff Jarrett, the deputy commissioner, just stood up and said, "Whoever's in charge of the Blue Mountains, you better head back because there's been a train accident." So I headed back up the hill and came out from there. And when I got there, naturally the interurban train ran up the back of the Indian Pacific, which had carriages on it. And the scene, it was already set, and we had our police response groups already up there trying to rescue and recover people out of the train. The fire and rescue went up and assisted. All other emergency management bodies were there to help out, and I ended up performing the site controller's role, which pretty well controlled the site, and only you let limited resources into the site, so there wasn't chaos. I was lucky that the region commander, who at the time was Assistant Commissioner Bruce Johnson, and he was pretty well took full control of the incident. The media spoke to the media and done everything else, but it was only a year or two earlier he was in charge of the Thredbo landslide.
Yeah, sure.
So he had quite a fair bit of experience in that emergency management roles.
Tough day for the Blue Mountains, obviously. They're a pretty close-knit community, and I imagine being in charge of the police there for the weeks and months that followed would have been tough too.
It was. There were seven people unfortunately lost their life in that accident, and they're all locals, heading into work basically. And there was a lot of functions, church services, those type of things held immediately after to get everyone together and to show our sympathy towards the things that happened. But the eventual cause, I think it was a signalling issue, whether it was communication between the train drivers or the signals, I'm not too sure. But our local detectives actually did the brief of evidence for the coroner.
You'd become, as I mentioned, the local area commander by this point. So run us through what an LAC commander actually does and what your role then became, I guess, as it moves more into, I'm guessing, people management and the pseudo HR person.
that is it. You're not fully operational, even though you have full control of that command and you're accountable for it, and you're accountable to the hierarchy, the government, and everyone else. But there's a lot of the administration side of things, finance, the operational sides, where you have different resources looking at different areas. So that's a lot of responsibility. But as time goes on, it gets easier. And doing a lot of the relief work prior to getting up there, other commands, you got to know what the run of the mill is. But I've enjoyed it, and I've enjoyed all the trips right through the organisation.
Does it change your mindset, I guess, that prior to that, you're the person going out into the situations, to the unknown, to the, I don't know what's going to happen at this particular job. It might seem like a quiet job, but it turns into something else, or vice versa. Mm. Now you're sending people in to those situations.
Yes. Yes, it's you only get to respond to the real serious type issues where you need to be there, like siege events, police, you know, injured in car accidents, those type of things where you're not dealing with the lower level policing issues. That all gets done by staff working for duty officers, you know, and they actually, you get a briefing every day and you're across everything that's happening anyhow. So if you have to respond, you respond. That's why you're there. You're in charge of the whole command. I did find probably the Blue Mountains a challenging type of a command as well, because it's, you know, not a lot of resourcing.
Yep.
And the logistical issues there in terms of having about five police stations, and there's a community expectation that they're all open.
Yeah.
And that's why I think years later they tried, the police service and the unions tried to consolidate policing into a couple of larger stations. It's more efficient to run the resourcing, you know, from say one or two large stations than having little shop fronts here and there.
Yeah, of course. Year 2000 is the Olympics, of course, and it's interesting when we think about the Olympics, because we always talk about the athletes, and then we typically talk about the transport and how well that ran, but such a major police operation as well, which you saw yourself involved in too. Just run us through the lead up to the Olympics from a policing point of view, and then the couple of weeks themselves.
Yeah, look, that was there was a lot of work involved in that. I worked at the Sydney Police Centre in the Operations Centre, where we were had a full oversight for all the region activities out here, like the lakes, where they had the rowing.
Yep.
I think there was shooting, pistol shooting, and there was a number of different events, hockey and different things happening in our areas. So I was across those, but there was a lot of, prior to the Olympic start, there was a lot of training you need to go into and undertake to ensure you knew what the role was. And then you're sort of dealing with forward commanders in charge of these sites. So that went on for a couple of weeks, and you know, I missed out on going to most of the events.
but an incredible time in Sydney. I think it was kind of like nothing else like it. We talk about, as I mentioned, the transport and just how the city seemed to come together, and everything seemed to work in those couple of weeks.
Yeah, look, it did. There was a lot of organisation from, there was one chief superintendent who actually, that was his job leading up, and there was a number of other senior police, their jobs to go and explore where the Olympics occurred previously.
Yep.
Overseas, and they worked out, you know, which was the best way to run it, and they came back here, and then they actually they put that plan into action here, and everything went well. You know, the volunteers, a lot of volunteers assisting, and that was a big part of the success. And I think most people were quite positive with the way the police handled that.
Now, 2003, you have a career switch to the role that I think as many people in this area would know you most for, and that is that you became the commander at St Mary's Local Area Command. So back to St Mary's after a couple of decades of when you were last there. Yeah. What had changed between the early 80s and 2003 when you arrived back to St Mary's?
Well, the workload, had, you know, certainly changed a lot. It was a very, very busy command, and from a resourcing point of view, you probably didn't have the resources like they did up here at Penrith. Even though Penrith and St Mary's pretty well two different commands, but we're under the one LGA, being Penrith, and we had to work together, but the resourcing was different. You know, you had your resources, Penrith had theirs, and you know, if there was something happening where you needed to share, you would. But you know, it was just much busier, and there was lots of times when I got back there around in 2003, you were handing over up to 10 or 12 jobs at the end of each shift from one vehicle to the other, and you might have had two or three, probably three lease vehicles working during the shift. So there's a lot of workload, a lot of domestic violence, you know, break and headers. We had the methadone clinic there for some time. It's brought a lot of people into the area, and the local politicians, Tanya Davies actually, and the Chamber of Commerce and everyone there worked together to have that put over to Mount Druitt Hospital in the grounds there, which is probably a better place, I think. But lovely people to work with down there, and the police themselves, you can only achieve success through your own resources, and they're the most important things you have.
You talk about resources, so I know that every time a class graduates from Goulburn, we get the media release through and it says, oh, well, there's four police that have been allocated to St Mary's yep. and three to Penrith and whatever else.
Yeah.
Those numbers, like, you'd have a number that you feel you need and want. Was it always under what you had been given, or yeah. sometimes did you get what you want?
Yeah, look, you're right. I think every command would want more police. Because some of the, even when I was there, the commands are running operationally at about 80% of their staffing levels. You know, people are often sick, restricted duties, you know, doing other duties that they can't do their operational duties. So it makes it hard to put, you know, enough resources out there. And at the present moment, I think, and even when I was there, the turnover of police is a lot different now to what it used to be when I joined, when I spent that 40 years there. I stayed in as a career, but most police today, I think, are changing over every 7 years or something, was the latest information I had. Now that leads to probably the training of the individuals. When I was joining, I had senior sergeants and sergeants there that could tell you how to do things properly.
Mm.
But today, and it's no fault of the people, the police that are there or anything like that, it's you've got people that probably haven't fully learnt the job themselves, have got to go and sort of help train the new police as they come out.
Yeah, okay. 2005, long way from St Mary's,
yep.
But the Cronulla riots, which a pretty dark day for Sydney. You're involved in the police response to that. So
yeah.
How did that come about? Was it just a matter of all hands on deck on that particular day?
Oh, well, you're trained as a to be a forward commander in these situations. You know, it's operational sort of readiness type training that you get at that level. So I was in charge of a group. We worked out of Riverwood Police Station, had a lot of resourcing under us and deployed vehicles from there. But that was an event that started, I think, around the Cronulla Beach, and racism and immigration, lots of things wrapped into it. But it got quite violent, where people were travelling across suburbs and taking revenge on different innocent people and just wandering along the streets. So the government at the time actually brought in legislation, which is Public Disorder Act, where police had the powers to close down suburbs if they knew that there was people, you know, going to cause violence, crime or fear, you know, to the community. And that that legislation really helped at that time. But it was just another experience that, during your policing career that you got exposure to.
I guess it's interesting that, because when you're in the moment of it, you obviously don't want it to be happening. You know, there's scary moments. There's what do we do next, and you don't, the uncertainty of it all.
Yeah.
But when you look back on it, as much as you know, you don't want these things to happen, but they become, for want of a better word, highlights of a career in policing.
Yeah, that's true. At the time that they're happening, they're just another job that you have to go and do, and but you gain a lot of experience from it. You meet lots of people, and you're helping to keep the community safe. So I think it's been quite good.
You mentioned domestic violence calls earlier, and we know that the Penrith LGA has a significant issue there. Are they the most difficult calls that the police go out on in terms of, or maybe the most frustrating want of a, you know, finding where they land in a police sort of perspective?
Yes, they are. They're, you can't take them, you've got to actually respond to them. They do assessments in relation to all jobs that come into the police department, police force, and they'd assess the response, and then the cars get called to them. But yeah, you just, with domestic violence, you just don't know, even though police do a lot of history checks in terms of, background histories and all that, you just don't know what you're going to turn up to. Some people are very violent, and, the victims really need to get out of the relationship or take some type of action. And police are now part of that solution for that to assist them.
Do you think that's something that, and I know a lot would have changed during your career, but response to incidents like that changed dramatically from when you were around in the 70s, 80s to by the time you finished up?
Yeah, look, it did actually. There was a lot of, there was more government involvement to with other government departments working with police, you know, to instead of working in a silo effect, you'd be working together on these issues, and you'd meet and talk about it and how you can better respond to it. And overall, I think, you know, they were making headway.
What about the public's response to police in general? Do you think that you noticed a change in that during your career, even a deterioration in that? Or do you think at its core, most people still have the respect for what you're doing day in, day out?
Yeah. Look, I think over the years it has slipped, you know, the respect for police. You know, it's not an easy job. You know, back in the early days, it was probably a lot easier. There was more respect, even though you still had the antisocial type behaviour. But today, some people just don't have any respect for police, and that's something that, you know, police have to deal with. And, you know, as I say, I think they're the best. You need a great team to work with you to be able to achieve your work. And I certainly had that at St Mary's and Mountains and everywhere else.
We always say it, and I know a lot of people say it, but the first people you call when you're in any sort of trouble, so including those who are critical and whatnot, they're still going to be the first people you call.
Yeah, absolutely. And even though these people that, you know, cause the trouble, as you say, they'd still ring up the cops if they think they need help, someone else is threatening them or whatever. I think overall, you certainly need the police. You can't do away with them, and they do a great job.
You decided to retire in 2013, so about a decade at St Mary's. Was that a decision you made sort of a long way out, or were you just feeling that now was the time? What was behind that retirement decision?
I'd just turned 60, and you know, I could have went out a little earlier normally, if I wanted to, but I was enjoying the job, enjoying the community down there. Been in that one location at St Mary's and worked with the local community and the local council, and been here and Superintendent Feschek from Penrith. We had a pretty good relationship, so it was not a hard thing to come to work and to ensure that, you know, we did our work. But it was just time, I think, after 40 years, you come to say, well, you know, you don't know how long you're going to sort of go on to, so you might as well get some retirement and quality time there.
Remember your last day? What was that like?
Yeah, that was good. That was they had a sort of a morning tea at the down at the police station, then an official march off and you know, official salutes and all that. So and then Sal and I got driven home in a highway patrol car. So that was all good. I had a farewell function there at St Mary's Leagues Club. One of the chief inspectors, Mick Connolly, actually organised it all, and that went off very well. It was about 300, and Ray Hadley came out and MC'd, and Gus Gould was there, and MG, and they spoke a little bit, and yeah, there was a great night.
You obviously, you know, were at St Mary's there for a decade. You mentioned Ben Feschek, so working together with Penrith. Yep. A few years later, though, pretty dramatic change, probably the most dramatic change in terms of how LACs and PACs, I think they might be sort of known as operate, and that is the merger essentially of Penrith and St Mary's. Yeah. So by that time, you're an outsider looking in by the time that happened. But tell me about why you think they did that, and also good or a bad thing.
Look, I think it's probably a good thing. It's going back to the original divisional type days. From a resourcing point of view, I think having all the resources under one command is probably better than trying to do the best you can with what you got. So from that perspective, it's a one local government area. You got the one commander, you got the one commands, even though you've got two major stations. And I think that from a resourcing point of view has got to be positive. And they were thinking about doing that prior to me leaving. Okay. And I think they sort of waited for a few years, because now they're classified as super LACs, and there's quite a few of them around the cities. mainly, and I think in the country they call them districts or something. Another thing was, and one of the things, the achievements down there was building the new police station.
Yep.
In my time, and that was a great project that we belonged to. A lot of my predecessors, commanders, had tried to get the station there prior to me getting there, and the government hadn't come, you know, with the finances and everything. So during my time, we actually had that built, and part of the project to have it built, we had to ensure that we had a vision that was strategic enough to fit a lot of resources into the building. And at the time, they didn't really think that they needed a custody suite down there to be able to charge people. You'd have to bring everyone to Penrith there. That takes time. What they did do, they eventually came good with the Department of Commerce, who were running the project with the finance point of view for the government. They came good, and they actually built the custody suite in the station. So it's a pretty advanced station there.
Yeah, I'm sure you've been inside. Great facility on King Street. Yep.
Yeah,
great facility and very modern facility. I guess that ensured partly too that, I mean, both stations are going to remain open despite the merger. It's important that both of those stations do remain operational.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that they've got a lot of operational police working out of some areas at the moment. I go to retired police days and you speak to the current commander and you find out how they're operating and different things. So they have a lot of the community support people, I think, here at Penrith to work, you know, with their domestic teams and all the different community projects that's running.
Now, you made the most of retirement, a lot of travel
yes.
in that. That was something that I'm guessing you kind of missed out on a bit during the policing career and had a bit of a list to get through.
Yeah, no, it was good to be able to get overseas and have a look at some other countries. And we went to, just one of the countries which is in the news at the moment, Israel.
Okay.
That was an experience to get there. I was there in 2017 and, to see how self-sufficient they were and just have a look around there. Plus, I've been to Egypt and, you know, London and some of the other big cities, New York, Los Angeles and those places.
And, of course...
And Greece.
In Greece, okay. And, of course, more importantly, watching your beloved Penrith Panthers in the back row of the Western Grandstand.
Yes, yeah, I see you there pretty often. And, we're avid Panther supporters and... It's great to see them have the success they're having, and I get to, as you know, to all the home games and all the grand finals, and the only one I missed was the one up at Suncorp during COVID period.
Yeah, it's a, you obviously sometimes miss out on doing some of that stuff during a career that's sort of 24/7, so you've been able to get up there and enjoy it.
Yeah, no, that's right. It was, I didn't get to see too many games while I was working because, you know, you're doing different things and on call and different things. Mm. So I got to the odd game, but now I'm retired, I want to get to all of them. So it'll be good to see when they get their new grandstands built and everything. It'll be great.
See where we end up.
Yeah.
You had three kids along the way as well.
Yeah, I've got...
any of them in the police force?
No, none of them actually decided to go there. There were ones working for the RBA, another one with Sydney Trains, and another guy's an electrician who's in renewable space converting methane gas into electricity. So,
okay.
Yeah,
very different careers.
Yeah, they're all different things. Yeah. And they decided, I didn't pressure them anyway, I let them pick their careers, and they decided to go along that line.
And you're obviously still living in the Penrith area, so once you were here, didn't want to leave?
No, that's true. Living out in Glenmore Park, so Cambridge Park, then Glenmore Park, and when we moved out there early 90s, built a double-storey place and spent about 7 or 8 years there, sold it and got a single-storey on, but been there for about 20-odd years. So, still living there, got no intention at this stage to move on. I like the area. I know a lot of people, when they retire, they go to the beaches and...
Yeah.
But you got to think of... You know, where your grandchildren and everyone live, and your children themselves.
Yeah.
Try and keep somewhere close by, I think.
Yeah, of course. What advice would you give to someone coming into the police force today? A very different police force than how it looked when you first entered it, but the groundwork and the you know, the all the elements are the same. Just it's a different way of doing it, and a different, as you mentioned, a different public response, and different crimes to deal with, and different levels of bureaucracy, I guess, to deal with as well. Look, so I think, what advice now?
Yeah, I think, you know, naturally get there, try your best. I think move around a little bit within the organisations, get different exposure to different jobs, get a mentor that's someone who's done a lot of these things before you, speak to them and try and get them to give you some guidance. But, you know, the policing is still a great career, and I'd suggest anyone wants to go there to give it a go.
Are there times that you miss it? And I'm thinking of maybe like during the COVID period, which obviously had a significant police response and impact. Do those things come along and you go, oh, I kind of, these are the days I miss it and I wish I was sort of part of the process?
No, you're not really. I still relate to some of the incidents that happen. You know, you see it on the news at night and, you know, you can sort of relate to some of the things that's probably going on behind the scenes for that to eventuate. But I think overall, once you retire, you know, you don't get too involved. I still get along, as I say, once every 12 months to a retirement, retired police days, which is held by the local area commands or the PACs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're good just to catch up with some retired people that have done the same career as yourself.
Now, the last question we always ask stumps some people, but see how we go. How would Ray Folwood like to be remembered?
I think basically to know that I was always willing to work with the community to reduce the violence, crime and fear, which is a mission statement of the police. Now, whether they were politicians or local council or just local community, I would always work with them and make sure our staff work with them to resolve issues and come up with better responses to what they're looking for. So that's something basic, but I'd be happy if they just walked away and said, oh, well, at least he listened and did something about it for me.
Very good. Well, look, it's an extraordinary career with some great highlights along the way, some lowlights, obviously, but a big impact on that St Mary's area, particularly in the last 10 years of your career. So thank you very much for joining us and telling us your story.
Thanks, Troy.
And I hope you enjoyed our chat. On the Record is produced by The Western Weekender. To hear future episodes, search Western Weekender wherever you listen to podcasts and make sure you hit subscribe. Check out westernweekender.com.au and we will see you next time.